This is Ozarks at Large. The effects of the coronavirus have hit just about every industry in the world by now. And for magazine publishers, generating revenue and content during a pandemic is getting trickier. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth spoke with Sarah A. Lewis, executive editor of the Little Rock-based Oxford American and host of their podcast Point South, about how the magazine is pivoting during a crisis.
So I know that the last issue, the spring issue, came out right before or right when everything kind of started happening with the pandemic. Can you talk to me a little bit about how it's been for Oxford American since then, putting together your summer issue?
So because we're a quarterly magazine, we sign our stories up a long time in advance. So when an issue comes out, you know, it's been probably 6 months since we first, you know, we're seeing drafts and getting those stories ready for the issue. And so we were already well and on our way into the summer issue when, you know, pandemic lockdowns started happening. It was actually more the fall issue that was affected for us because summer would be the time that people go out and report. So the summer issue, we felt pretty confident that we had enough in place, and we had been working on this issue for a long time. It's a special issue called the Place issue that interrogates the nature and feeling of place and what that means in the South. And that issue would have hit stands in the next week or so. And we've decided to put out a special double edition of the Place issue that incorporates things that we wanted to do in the fall, things that we did in the summer, and really try to make the most out of what we could do with the restraints of the pandemic without being able to send people out to report news stories, but still creating something that felt like it was responding to what's happening and felt like it was really substantially engaging with the themes of the Oxford American. So we've actually been really fortunate that we've been able to pivot to put out something really special that we probably wouldn't have even thought about doing had it not been for what's going on in the world right now.
And how did that come together? What was the kind of thought process and logistically behind putting together this double issue?
So there's this thing in poetry called obstruction, where you give somebody something that they can't do. And I found that that has tended to be a really generative exercise, that when you have a challenge, you're actually able to be more creative. And we had a huge challenge here, which is that, you know, an enormous part of our advertising revenue is from tourism and hospitality. A big part of our revenue is live events, and another part of our revenue is newsstands. And looking at the rest of the year and knowing that we weren't going to be able to meet our projections for that required us to take some steps to consolidate and streamline some of the things that we knew we were doing. So in some ways, the double issue was born out of necessity, out of financial necessity, out of a likelihood that there were going to be disruptions to the workflow, whether that was printing or mail. I mean, we couldn't have known when we were trying to make these decisions all of the things that could have been affected. So there was that, you know, necessity being the mother of invention component, but then also just the excitement of thinking about something that the Oxford American hadn't done in quite a long time. Like, what can we do if we're taking double the amount of page space to talk about place? And how does that, like, free us up in terms of design and the stories that we can tell and the length? So I think it was one of those things where both the creativity, the editorial side, and the business necessity were working together. And ultimately, we're just really proud with where we ended up and excited to share that with people in August.
And since the next issue is about place, kind of that idea has changed a lot recently. People are stuck at home. They can't really travel. How has that changed, or how are you responding in this new issue to what's going on in reality with that?
Well, I think you've really answered that with the question itself, which is that we find ourselves in this moment, the socio-historic moment, where our concept and definition of place is defamiliarized and disrupted by the fact that so many of us are confined to our homes and our places of work almost exclusively. And so the fact that we were already exploring what it means to be of and from the South from multiple vantage points before this, it's almost created this, like, I wouldn't say a best of, but it's almost like a travel guide for the imagination. We're talking about spaces and places that we were able to tell stories from and photograph before this happened, and then we're able to present them and also include stories written by people who are experiencing place and the confines of place and space in a whole new way because of the pandemic.
You know, how do you feel that the role of the magazine, what the role is during a time like this? A lot of people are stuck at home. They're looking for ways to escape through literature or even through reporting. What is the role of a magazine at a time like this?
The great thing about what we do is that our role hasn't changed, and it shouldn't change. I mean, our mission is to explore the complexity and vitality of the South. And while there are these immediate things of, like, you know, disruptions to revenue streams that we're all working remotely, it's still our mission to explore the complexity and vitality of this place. I think the challenge and the new opportunity is meeting readers where they are. So we're a quarterly magazine. We also have a podcast, but we're known primarily as being a quarterly magazine. And we've been challenged to communicate with our audience more frequently. And I don't mean that challenge as if it's been hard. I mean, we have been tasked with that. And so we're continuing to facilitate discussions about Southern art, music, and culture from both craft and critical perspectives with the makers themselves, and bringing them to folks in a way that's a little bit more immediate and intimate than we do in the magazine. But the magazine is still coming. It's still there. So to me, it's not so much about the role changing so much as the mechanism for delivery needing to adjust.
Can you talk a little bit about those mechanisms outside of the traditional magazine, digital or the podcast, any other ways that you are reaching people?
Well, you know, I don't want to turn into a commercial for Zoom, but like most people, we have relied a lot on Zoom webinars and discussions because that's something that's free and accessible to our audience. You know, within the Central Arkansas environment, we're known as live programmers. We put on a lot of concerts and community events here. And with quarantining and social distancing guidelines in place, we're not doing that anymore. So what can we do to create that intimacy, create that experience, you know, finding ways to have emotional connectivity despite the disruptions to physical proximity has really been where my brain has been at. And so that's been editors taking first person stabs at social media, taking over our streams. That's facilitating live conversations. That's pre-recording for video and audio discussions and performances with musicians, artists, and just cultural tastemakers.
And has that made you more accessible to people who maybe you couldn't have reached before?
Well, we certainly hope. I mean, we're seeing that we are reaching people that we haven't reached before. I mean, we recently had a conversation with Jason Isbell and Silas House, and a lot of the people who were on there engaging and watching the premiere were not people who were already fans of the OA. So it's a great way for us to share what we do. We're a nonprofit media organization, so getting the word out to the people is something that's really important to being able to share our mission. But it's also just giving the people that we already serve something to hold them over. I don't think that there's anybody right now who's not engaging with art on a daily basis. Like, what does a frontline worker do when they get home? Probably put on Netflix or listen to a podcast or maybe sit down with a book or a magazine. We're all engaging with some form of art. And so it's important to me that we continue to facilitate those conversations and those connections between artists and their audience and introduce people to artists they may not be familiar with yet.
Yeah. And how are you supporting artists and writers during a time like this?
Well, we've been extremely fortunate. As I mentioned, we're a nonprofit, so we rely greatly on our donors, subscribers, and different foundations and grant makers. And one of the things that we have been able to do most recently is to, even though we're doing a double issue, we'll still be paying our writers in the same timeline that they would have been paid if it were coming out next week. We were able to do that with some funding from the Windgate Foundation. We have had a fundraiser that we're our audience really stepped up and gave. And so we are incredibly thankful and fortunate for having not only engaged readers and subscribers, but also institutions like the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the Windgate Foundation, who believe in what we do and recognize us as a vital cultural organization and will support us to continue to do our work. And being a nonprofit, a lot of that work, you know, those resources go directly back into the community, whether that's artists or makers or editors. A lot of people benefit from any of the funding that comes into a cultural organization.
Right. A lot of companies are feeling that kind of financial strain right now. And the Atlantic last week laid off a number of employees and they cut salaries. So I just wondered why, from the Oxford American's perspective, is it important to support and to bolster journals and magazines that focus on long-form journalism and arts and culture, especially ones like yours that are rooted in a place like the South?
It's so important that it's difficult for me to even articulate. I think I can speak to a few things specifically about the Oxford American, which is that we're one of the only organizations in the world doing the work that we're doing in the American South. I mean, looking at the news this weekend, the stories that were being told about the South are like, you know, a bunch of people got together and went to a lake. And you're not going to find stories that explore the complexity and vitality of the American South and many other places. We complicate existing perceptions and stereotypes of our region. We challenge those ideas. And we also traffic a lot in nuance. And I don't see that in other spaces. So that in itself, I think, is vital to understanding and supporting the cultural fabric of an incredibly diverse and multifaceted region. Speaking more broadly, we are experiencing a time in our country where it's very difficult to get independent information, independent news, independent storytelling. Especially the South, which is essentially a news desert. There are not news organizations based here. And I wouldn't characterize or categorize the Oxford American as a news organization, but I do think we tell stories that are important to understanding what's going on now in the place we live in. And without having independent, especially nonprofit media, the only stories that are told are going to be from large media conglomerates that are not based here. And I don't think that that posits an accurate perception or perspective of what it's like to live here and be here and thrive here.
And so what kinds of stories are you focused on telling about the South or from the perspective of people who are from our region?
That's a tough one to answer because it's almost easier to answer the reverse, that we aren't telling the stories that perpetuate stereotypes or limited perceptions of what it means to stay here. It's almost impossible for me to tell you the story that we tell because when I get the pitch, it's going to surprise me because I haven't heard it before. So we're looking to be surprised. We're looking to be moved. I really go back to that mission of exploring the complexity and vitality. Like, if it's not doing one of those two things, whether it's fiction or memoir or a story that's supported by the Pulitzer Center, it's not really appropriate for the Oxford American. So, you know, something that I would say that does characterize the work we do is taking really deep dives. I saw a lot of reporting about the border crisis and about residential centers in the South. I never read a story that took a look at 30 years of legislation and economy and cultural institutions until I read Emily Goglock's story on the South Texas Residential Center outside San Antonio. And that's the kind of thing that, to me, makes the OA the OA, because nobody else is going to take 6,000 words and let a writer go into like what's happening in the 1980s and how that affects today. When I talk about the Point South podcast, the tagline that I always use is that we're looking at underreported stories from Southern history and their reverberations in the present. And not every Oxford American story is based in the past or situated in some, you know, historical framework. But I do feel like when I read the Oxford American, I have a better understanding of where we came from and where we're going.
Sarah A. Lewis is the executive editor of the Oxford American magazine and host of its podcast, Point South. You can find episodes and more information at oxfordamerican.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.